Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice. Ladies and gentlemen, this week has been pretty momentous in terms of the major developments that have occurred. On Friday, of course, one of the major ones was a global... Tom?
Global,
yeah. Internet outage that affected corporations, government institutions, airports, hospitals, all over the world. It affected, as far as we know now, what we've been told, primarily, if not exclusively, computers that ran the Windows operating system. Of course, that's Microsoft manufactured Windows. Ordinarily, you might, in the case where Windows machines failed so dramatically, hear something from the folks at Cupertino. But Apple has been conspicuously silent in the time since the wipeout hit, which suggests, at least to me, that Macintoshes might have been as easily damaged as Windows computers were they installed in so many networks, in so many clusters around the world. The problem, as you know, is that a piece of software, a software update, actually, was installed in all those computers that somehow disagreed with the operating system. And the only way to fix it, so we're told, is since they cannot connect to the internet, those damaged computers, they have to be restarted, turned off, and turned back on by hand. By the hand of humans. Humans are needed, oddly enough, in all this. And it brings to mind something I've been thinking about but been sort of hesitant to share on this broadcast. Now's the time, I guess. This is the age where we're being told that coming up next, coming right up, self-driving cars. Not introduced with great success as of yet, but still we're in the wave of hype about them. And it seems to me, given the now obvious difficulty of bringing autonomous cars to the marketplace, we might well start a little closer to something that's feasible. How about self-diagnosing computers? How about computers that don't just go dead and say with their silence and their blank screen, you figure it out? My response would be, if you're so smart, you tell me what's wrong. Why not self-diagnosing computers? Hello, welcome to the show.
Let's get down to it.
kind of a country western ending. From New Orleans, Louisiana, not country western at all, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. It is the week coming up when the Olympics start, and therefore, it's news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. French security forces have begun locking down large parts of central Paris. That began on Thursday, ahead of the hugely complex Olympics opening ceremony next week. On the River Seine, the opening parade along 6 kilometers, 4 miles of the river, led to the closure of Riverside Central districts to most vehicles, beginning at 5 a.m. Paris time on Thursday. Anyone wanting to enter the highest security gray zone along both banks of the river, such as, you know, residents or tourists with hotel reservations in the area, are going to need a security pass in the form of a QR code. Well, that can't fail in the wake of the worldwide internet shutdown, can it? 10 million spectators are expected in Paris. Temporary sports stadiums have sprung up at popular locations, such as the Eiffel Tower, the Invalides, or the Place de la Concorde.
Ah, the French.
And new Olympic VIP lanes are the latest traffic snarling addition. I was in London when they pulled that stunt. VIP lanes for Olympic visitors in a city with notoriously narrow streets, as it was. Those lanes were empty. The Olympic visitors preferred to stay in central London, where the shopping is. But this is Paris. It's all different. Quote, it's true that our concept of having a large number of temporary sites in the heart of the city, obviously with that, there are constraints. But I feel like people are seeing what we're doing, said the Director General of Paris 2024, Etienne Taubois. Many central metro stations closed on Thursday until the day after the opening ceremony. Because of that ceremony in the Seine, the vast security operation has been giving senior police officers cold sweats, according to Agence Press, ever since it was announced in 2021 because of the difficulty of securing so many spectators in such a large, densely packed urban area. 45,000 officers are set to be on duty for the parade July 26th, assisted by thousands of soldiers and private security agents. The installation of tens of thousands of metal security barriers all along the opening ceremony route has outraged some residents of Paris who feel closed in. Meanwhile, 9 days before the opening ceremony, the mayor of Paris, Anne Hidalgo, braved the murky waters of the Seine earlier this week to show the river is clean enough to host the game's outdoor swimming events. Sporting a wetsuit and goggles, Hidalgo swam in the famed waterway as hundreds of onlookers watched from the riverbanks. She was fulfilling a promise she made back in January. She was joined by Tony Estanguet, head of the games. French President Macron, who had promised to join the Seine bathers, was a notable absentee. The Seine, said Hidalgo, is exquisite. The water is very, very good. A little cool, but not so bad. Unquote. But there's more Olympic news. The Paris-born aristocrat who founded the International Olympic Committee at the end of the 19th century, this according to, again to Agence France-Presse, is once again proving to be a divisive figure ahead of the Olympics, while Baron Pierre de Coubertin has been slammed for his views on women and colonialism. Others have praised his dedication to using sport to promote peace and see him as a visionary. The Olympic Games and the sporting model he created have stood the test of time. That's a quote from Thomas Bach. Of course, he's president of the IOC. Every human has the right to be judged only and uniquely in the context of his time, said Bach. I would like our visionary founder to be judged in the same way, unquote. Bach. But his detractors point out that de Coubertin was, in his own words, a, quote, fanatical colonialist, unquote, who believed the white race to be superior and who opposed women taking part in public sporting competitions. De Coubertin's family is angry the Baron has been relegated to the shadows in the run-up to the Games. He doesn't feature prominently in any of the official narrative around the Games, rarely name-checked by Paris 2024 organizers. And Natasha Watley grew up in Irvine, California, played softball at UCLA, won gold for Team USA 20 years ago. She lives in L.A. now. She's excited to share her hometown and her sport with the current Olympians, except that is when Olympic organizers announced that softball games for the 2028 L.A. Olympics will not be played in L.A., but in Oklahoma City. Quote, to me, it's almost felt like a slap in the face, says Watley. It's the easy way out to send everybody to Oklahoma, unquote. She said the decision would deprive softball players of the full Olympic experience. She says, that makes me so sad. Millions would have been required to downsize a Major League Baseball stadium or add seating to a softball or minor league baseball stadium, even if one could be found that would allow for months of renovation. That spending could be perilous in an Olympics for which the taxpayers could be on the hook for any financial losses, says the LA Times. In Oklahoma City, softball games will be played in a 13,000-seat double-deck stadium. It's regularly filled for the Women's College World Series. Quote, we would have to go to a baseball stadium, and really, our game just isn't showcased the best at a baseball stadium. Dugouts are so far. Our game is intimate. It's fast. And a baseball stadium just takes all that away. That's a quote from one of the LA Olympics officials. Softball is only a demonstration sport, so it could be part of the 2028 games, but not part of the 2032 games. It's the Olympics, it's a movement, and we all need one every day. And now, news of the warm, won't you? Dateline Lawrence, Kansas. Around the globe, communities at risk from repeated flooding due to climate change face stark decisions. Some communities in peril of flooding may resolve or be urged to relocate to a safer location, something known as managed retreat. In the United States, flood-prone communities in coastal states like Louisiana and Alaska, yeah, our states are so alike, have already commenced managed retreat inland. Quote, it's retreating from risk. We hope to provide decision support for the equitable implementation of retreat to build climate resilience. That's a quote from Elena Sutley, associate professor of civil engineering at the University of Kansas. Kansas has a unit. Sutley's leading a three-year, $650,000 multidisciplinary study of managed retreat. It's partly funded by the National Science Foundation and Canada's New Frontiers in Research Fund. Each agency funds the scientists at institutions in their respective countries. Now, on the other hand, there was a story this week about island nations. We've been told for quite a while now that island nations, like in the South Pacific, like in your South Pacific, are among the most threatened with drowning by rising sea levels. We learned this week that scientists are surprised that some of these island nations, not all of them, are experiencing the wave action building new sand, depositing new sand on their coasts to actually make them larger. Some islands are experiencing depletion at one end and accretion at the other. And yes, it rhymes. Meanwhile, more news of the warm lithium needed for batteries that power electric vehicles and store electricity from renewable energy projects. That lithium is likely to deplete and maybe even contaminate local water supplies. That's according to a new paper published this week. So don't be depending on your lithium now. From mining the mineral to processing it for battery use, water is essential for producing lithium. It's a soft, silvery metal with superior ability to hold a charge, according to Inside Climate News. Lithium demand is rising as the world pivots away from fossil fuels, at least until the next election. Researchers are increasingly scrutinizing the environmental impacts of extracting and using that mineral, critical to the energy transition. A new paper is designed as a primer for community members, activists, and other researchers about lithium's impact on water supplies. It makes the situation clear. Across their entire life cycle, lithium products will have, quote, impacts on both the quality and quantity of water resources, unquote, that will primarily affect communities already on the front lines of climate change. Climate change mitigation sometimes can make it even more difficult for societies and environments that are already under extreme stress to be able to adapt to climate change, says J.A. Blair, associate professor in geography and anthropology at Cal State Polytechnic University. He led the study. By far, the biggest impact of renewable energy development on water will come from lithium mining. Not Bitcoin mining, that's just using up all our electricity. Hard rock mining, which provides 63% of the world's lithium supply, requires huge amounts of water and intensive mitigation efforts to avoid contaminating local water supplies. In Nevada, at a place called Thacker Pass, a new open pit lithium mine, that must be beautiful, it's currently under construction, will use 1.6 billion gallons of water each year of its 41-year lifespan, according to this research paper. That's enough water for 53,000 Americans only. Despite efforts to present lithium mining as a novel climate-smart form of mining, at its most basic open-pit lithium mining involves creating massive holes in the earth that produce huge quantities of tailings and lasting impacts on waterscapes, the researchers write. Other mining methods include lithium brine evaporation, that's used in South America, where lithium-laced brine water located deep in the earth is pumped to the surface. It's allowed to evaporate and leave behind the mineral. That process can deplete those deep aquifers, which are often interconnected with other supplies of water that are safe for drinking and other uses by humans. There's also direct lithium extraction, your DLE, where lithium and other minerals are removed from brine water that is then sent back underground, just like the water from fracking. Some companies have touted that emerging method as more sustainable and less water intensive, but it actually requires vast sums of fresh water. One of those projects, a DLE project, is in Green River, Utah. Local people and environmentalists, who could be local or distant, have protested that project over its potential impacts on their water supply. Project's going to pull water from the largest tributary of the already overdrafted Colorado River. Eight states and a country depend on that river for water, and they're not getting as much as they've been guaranteed. Residents fear the toxic brine from underground could contaminate freshwater supplies, like the toxic brine from water used in fracking. We're making the world better day by day, ladies and gentlemen. News of the Warm, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, just a little bit of news of our friend the Atom. Coming from Russia, millions of Russians in the south of the country were left without electricity a few days ago after a power unit at the Rostov nuclear power plant was shut down due to a malfunction. That plant supplies power to Russia's entire Southern Federal District. Rolling power outages affected residents of Russia's Krasnodar territory. Rostov region, Sevastopol, and Crimea. That's the part of Ukraine that Russia illegally annexed in 2014. So they're suffering double. Russia's state-owned energy group Rosatom said one of the nuclear power plant's four power units was shut down due to a malfunction of the turbine generator. The reasons are being investigated, says a Rosatom representative talking to Reuters. Or to only one writer, maybe. Valery Adrianov from Moscow's Financial University told the Russian newspaper Izvestia a heat wave swept through Russia in recent days. It likely contributed to the power plant's malfunction. Quote, electricity consumption in the country increased by 9% second week of this month. Electricity is primarily used for air conditioning and cooling systems. Adrianov linked the issue to an increased demand for electricity and the possible overheating of equipment. I blame the air conditioners. And now just briefly, some news of the crypto winter. Wazir X, a leading Indian crypto exchange, that's crypto exchange with a dot, halted withdrawals this week after a security breach it called a force majeure event resulted in the loss of $230 million, nearly half its reserves. Singapore-based travel service conglomerate Trip.com now faces criticism from the crypto community after announcing the termination of its NFT project, non-fungible token to you and me, called Trekkie. The project's official account on X posted it would be officially terminated beginning of next month. All features for its Phase 2 plan would be canceled. Its community operations would close down. The project highlighted that all collaborative activities associated with its NFT project will also be terminated. It does not rule out starting the NFT project again in the future. NFTs, non-fungible tokens, you know, those were those, quote, art, unquote, pieces that didn't really exist anywhere but on the internet. I wonder how they were affected this week. And decentralized finance protocol Doe Finance lost $1.8 million in digital assets this week after a flash loan attack on the protocol. It's a crypto winner. No heat wave there.
For the life of a deputy.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. Good news this week. President Biden and I agree on one thing. Neither of us believe in polls. And I'm not quitting this show either. And now, ladies and gentlemen, an apology packed. Apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
First of all, and this stands in for a lot of similar apologies that happened this week. In Henderson, North Carolina, Councilwoman Geraldine Champion has regrets after posting online that the attempted assassination of former President Trump was staged. She called it fake news because people in the audience didn't run away. Quote, I felt like Mr. Trump had orchestrated this for the purpose of getting more votes. I did not believe he had been shot. The public official didn't make that statement. The private citizen did, said Champion of herself. The piece I'm sorry about is I didn't wait until I got the full report. I never would have said that statement, which included, quote, now the taxpayers have to pay for a fake shooting. I would never have said that statement, she says, if I'd waited just a little longer to find out that there was a tragedy that happened, and the tragedy was someone losing their whole life. She's only served on the city council for 6 months, since her remarks. Her Facebook page has been hacked and she's received backlash from anonymous callers. Dateline Whitecap, Dakota First Nation, Saskatchewan. Canada's Indigenous Relations Minister has apologized to 9 First Nations, those are what we call Native Americans, in Manitoba and Saskatchewan following decades of the Lakota and Dakota being labeled as refugees. Gary Anandasangari, thank you, said this week at a ceremony south of Saskatoon that the group should have been formally recognized as First Nations in Canada. Quote, on behalf of the government of Canada and all Canadians, we seek to begin to mend this injustice with 3 simple words. We are sorry, he said. We acknowledge, he continued, you've been treated as second-class First Nations, as strangers here in your homeland in Canada, a Canada you helped defend, build, and developed. Unquote. The apology was met with cheers from the crowd of more than 650 people. That's when they stopped counting, I guess. Jack Black has said he's canceling the rest of the Tenacious D World Tour after his bandmate and longtime buddy Kyle Gass sparked an outcry with a comment about the assassination attempt on Donald Trump. You heard about that, right? The comedy rock group were on stage in Sydney, Australia last week when Gass was asked to make a wish after being presented with a cake for his 64th birthday. Doesn't look that old. He appeared to reply, quote, don't miss Trump next time, unquote. He apologized, did Gass, for the comment on Instagram, saying it was, quote, a severe lack of judgment. The line I improvised on stage was highly inappropriate, dangerous, and a terrible mistake. He continued, I don't condone violence of any kind in any form against anyone. What happened was a tragedy. I'm incredibly sorry for my severe lack of judgment. I profoundly apologize to those I've let down and truly regret any pain I've caused. Unquote. The part I didn't get until this BBC report. Gass also split with his agent following the incident. Quote, Michael Green of Green Talent, quote, due to what occurred, we have parted ways, unquote. And independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. offered an apology to former President Trump after a video of their phone call on Monday was leaked. Trump spoke with Kennedy before he announced Vance as his running mate during day one of the convention. In the leaked call, Trump could be heard on speakerphone saying he agrees with some of Kennedy's stances on vaccines. I thought he was proud of warp speed. Trump also could be heard saying he would love for the long shot candidate to, quote, do something, adding it would be so good for Kennedy. Trump also told him, we're going to win. Kennedy apologized for the leak shortly after it was posted online. Quote, when President Trump called me, I was taping with an in-house videographer. I should have ordered the videographer to stop recording immediately. I'm mortified this was posted. I apologize to the president. Unquote. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida apologized this week to victims of forced sterilization surgery under a now-defunct eugenics protection law in Japan. Its top court ruled it was unconstitutional, and the government must pay damages to plaintiffs. This is from Kyodo News. During their meeting at the Prime Minister's office, Kishida expressed his government's readiness to settle cases currently pending in courts and even compensate those who haven't yet filed lawsuits. In his first direct apology to the victims since the Supreme Court ruling on July 3, Kishida said, quote, the government, which enforced the law, bears extremely grave responsibility. I am deeply sorry, and I offer an apology on behalf of the government, unquote. In what is often labeled as the worst human rights violation in Japan's post-World War II history, the law allowed people with intellectual disabilities, mental illnesses, or hereditary disorders to be sterilized without their consent to prevent the birth of inferior offspring. We want those superior offspring, don't we? After a widely panned performance of the U.S. national anthem at the Major League Baseball Home Run Derby, country singer Ingrid Andress apologized the next day, explaining she was drunk. Quote, I'm checking myself into a facility today to get the help I need. That was not me last night. I apologize to MLB, all the fans in this country. I love so much for that rendition. Unquote, her post on social media. Major League Baseball had no comment. A representative for Andress said there won't be any more comment from her. She's too drunk to come. No. Adidas is apologizing for any upset or distress caused by including Bella Hadid, a model with Palestinian lineage, in advertisements for its relaunch of its 1972 Munich Olympic sneaker. The sports apparel company selected Hadid as the face of its recently launched SL72 campaign that celebrates the 52nd anniversary of the Munich Olympics with the revival of Adidas sneaker from the 70s. It's a coveted classic, they say. 72 Olympics were overshadowed by a terrorist attack that left 11 Israeli athletes and one German police officer dead at the hands of a Palestinian militant group. Hadid's father is Palestinian. He identifies as a proud one. Quote, we're conscious that connections have been made to tragic historical events, though these are completely unintentional, and we apologize for any upset or distress caused, Adidas said in a statement. As a result, we're revising the remainder of the campaign. We believe in sport as a unifying force around the world, maybe even sports. The head of CrowdStrike, the firm whose software update was involved, was the putative cause of the worldwide internet thing, apologized for that failure, vowing to work with all customers as they work to get their operations back online. Quote, we're deeply sorry for the impact we've caused to customers, to travelers, to anyone affected by this, including our company. Many of the customers are rebooting the system, and it's coming up, and it'll be operational. He continued, it could be some time for some systems that won't automatically recover, but the company would make sure every customer is fully recovered. Unquote. In the world of soccer, what they call football, Chelsea midfielder Enzo Fernandez has apologized for singing a song with Argentina teammates that included racist and homophobic slurs about the French national team. The founders of Bitwise Enterprise posted a two-page apology letter on social media this week, blaming themselves for the lies and deception that caused that company's downfall and the loss of 900 jobs. Jake Soberall and Irma Olguin founded Bitwise 11 years ago as a hub for technology, education, and innovation. Their dreams of creating a viable company came crashing down in May of last year. During a final press conference to hype the fight between Jake Paul and Mike Perry, a yellow strip with black lettering appeared on the upper left-hand corner of the screen showing the event, that press conference. It read, quote, we apologize for the bad language. And finally, Houston City Council member Edward Pollard apologized to citizens of that city for the city's response to Beryl, the big storm that hit Houston a few days ago. Quote, we have to be transparent with the public and let them know that we did not all that we could do from a city standpoint, unquote, Pollard. He and several colleagues called for changes moving forward. One change council member suggested was passing an ordinance requiring generators for independent living facilities housing vulnerable populations. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, just a word or two about another event that happened this week, overshadowed by the Republican convention and the negotiations at the White House. It was Judge Aileen Cannon's decision on Monday to throw out Special Prosecutor Jack Smith's case against Donald Trump for taking and keeping and refusing to return secret government documents from the White House. Judge Cannon ruled that wasn't ruling on the case itself, but on the legal existence of Jack Smith's office. She ruled that it was unconstitutional for him to be appointed. Like you, folks at LaChaux wondered why Trump was keeping those documents in the first place. Now we know.
Ladies and gentlemen, the former President of the United States.
Hey, it's Donald. As you know, I'm a changed man. And one thing that's changed is my position towards intelligence documents that came into my possession. Lots of people, so many people, have asked me what I intended to do with those documents. Until now, I didn't really know. Maybe show them to friends. Maybe keep them for family keepsakes. Who knows? Last week, while God was intervening to keep me safe, he told me that these documents were too important not to share with you. That's exactly what I'm doing, thanks to Trump Intel. Imagine having a secret report by a CIA agent or an NSA assessment of a foreign power in the comfort and safety of your own home. And imagine that document is in a luxury frame of 100% wood. Well, your imagining days are over, thanks to Trump Intel. Every order at just $19.99 plus tax and handling brings you a randomly selected top secret document you can enjoy right now, and better yet, for years to come. More better yet, there's no handling. Trump Intel documents are exclusively machine selected from the world's largest collection of former government papers. And for extra collector value, I've personally initialed each one with a genuine Sharpie, your guarantee of quality. But as God reminded me just this morning, this offer can't last forever. When this historic collection has been all distributed to patriots just like you, this offer expires. Unless I'm reelected, then I'll take some more secret documents. So act now, before this exclusive offer is shut down by some weaponized prosecutor. If you order before midnight tomorrow, you'll get this beautiful solid wood frame included at no extra cost, except for shipping and handling. And once again, when you order from Trump Intel, there's no handling. Trump Intel, the secrets of the world in the palm of your hand. Hand sold separately. Order today and tell them God sent you.
Looks like must close.
The British tech journal, The Register, reports that Tesla vehicles sales registrations have dipped in the EU and the UK, as well as the United States. New vehicle registration data for June, published by the European Automobile Manufacturers Association, shows that new registrations of Teslas decreased in the region by 7.2% compared to June a year ago. For the entire first half of the year, the number is even bleaker, new Tesla registrations dropping 12% compared to last year. Tesla's EV market share has taken a corresponding hit. The company now accounts for only 10.8% of the EV market in Europe as of June, down from 11.6% earlier in the year, as other European automakers offering EVs, including BMW, Mercedes, and Volvo, have seen their share of the sector remain the same or grow by quite a lot. In Volvo's case, in the United States, its dominance in the EV market has been gradually shrinking to the point where the company's share of U.S. sales recently fell under 50% for the first time ever. Tesla's American sales decline has occurred simultaneously with overall growth in the U.S. market for electric cars. Just not Tesla's, that's all. The Register reports that there is a strike by Tesla workers in Sweden, and also the company hasn't released a new model in some time. It's evenly reportedly abandoned plans for a budget-priced model, which ain't coming out anytime soon. And then, I don't know, have you seen a Cybertruck on the road? I was next to one a couple of weeks ago. I don't think I know the truck driver who would find himself in a Cybertruck. But maybe I don't know truck drivers that well. Musk is going to move X and SpaceX from California to Texas because he's upset over a new state law designed to prevent teachers from being required to report LGBTQ students to their parents. The bill was proposed after several districts in the state passed rules requiring teachers to disclose that identification to parents if they were asked. This is the final straw, Musk said on Twitter. Because of this law and the many others that preceded it, attacking both families and companies, SpaceX will now move its HQ from Hawthorne, California, to Starbase, Texas. Musk has been criticizing gangs and violent drug addicts about San Francisco for years. He did that when he threatened to abandon Twitter headquarters in 2022 after the city of San Francisco said he couldn't install bedrooms in the building. He did take the Tesla headquarters from California to Texas in 2021, ostensibly to escape COVID-19 regulations he described as fascist, although Texas has much lower taxes than California. SpaceX, he says, has been reincorporated in Texas. There have reportedly been at least 72 liens filed against SpaceX and its contractors in Texas for unpaid bills amounting to at least $2.5 million. No wonder he likes Trump. Moving formally into the state could open the legal floodgates to a lot more angry creditors looking for cash. In addition, it's not clear whether X has ever bothered to clear its arrears on rent owed for its San Francisco HQ and other offices in the city, meaning there could be some hefty bills due before a move for that business could be finalized. And Tesla's robo-taxi reveal event is being postponed. Musk decided the front of the vehicle needs a tweak. The curtains were due to lift on August 8th, but word came out last week a delay was initiated by Elon to give engineers more time to rework the vehicle. Quote, requested what I think is an important design change to the front. An extra time allows us to show off a few other things, unquote. There's no detail on what form CyberCab might take. Might it look like Cybertruck? Cyber siblings? We can only wait. Meanwhile, there's not much waiting left before the end of this month, according to Elon. Polaris Dawn will launch from Cape Canaveral. It's the first all-civilian mission to include a spacewalk. Civilians in space. It's only one of its lofty goals, according to EarthSky.org. The mission will use a SpaceX capsule launched atop a Falcon 9 rocket. It also plans to reach the highest Earth orbit ever flown. Although, at this moment, the Falcon 9 is still grounded by the FAA after a second stage explosion on the 12th of this month. One of the civilian astronauts is Jared Isaacman. He was on the first all-civilian mission to space in 2021. Spent 3 days orbiting Earth. He reportedly made billions in a payment processing company he started in his teens. He's financially backing Polaris Dawn. And just as that first civilian space mission, Polaris Dawn will fundraise for the St. Jude Children's Hospital in Memphis. How does a space flight fundraise? Wait and see. The mission should last 5 days. Its initial orbit will be 870 miles above Earth. That's 3.5 times higher than the International Space Station. That height would send it through parts of the Van Allen radiation belt. The mission plans to use the opportunity to study the effects of space radiation on human health by putting humans there. They'll be wearing new SpaceX-designed spacesuits for the walk, which were unveiled just in May. The team announced the completion of their spacesuit testing just on the 18th of July. 2 days ago! The capsule doesn't have an airlock. Instead of the window, the ship will be transformed with a nose hatch called a Skywalker. When the hatch swings open, all the astronauts and the interior of the capsule will be exposed to the vacuum of space. Two will stay within the vehicle. The other two will perform the spacewalk. This will break the record for the most people in the vacuum of space at one time. Going from one to two. Sounds like Musk love. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station, or on your audio device whenever you want it. Please come on back, won't you? A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead and Thomas Walsh at WWNO for help with today's program. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, I remember those, and the playlist of the music heard here on, as long as a lot of stuff to watch and listen to and maybe remember, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on X. You may well ask, why? Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the Crescent City.